Emily Andelman, and with me is Marion Levent. This is June 16, 1986, and we're interviewing Mr. Bernard Goldberg. Thank you very much for having us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for coming.
We'd like to start out by asking you about your family and your immediate family, your parents and siblings and so on.
All right. My father is from Warsaw. My mother was from some Kleinstädtel in southern Poland. My father came to this country in 1906 after the uprisings of 1905, when he was a member of the socialist group among the Jews in Warsaw, and he had to flee. I just heard a story from a cousin who lived with Grandma in Warsaw, that Grandma had a breadboard, a cutting board, which opened up and was hollowed out on the inside, and that's where my father hid his pistol as a revolutionist. So whenever the Tsar's police came hunting for arms or something, she would quickly start slicing bread. She was a tough old bird too, you know. So my father came to this country with what had been a pretty fair Jewish education, but no secular education except what he picked up. He had been apprenticed to a cabinet maker, but I think was too rebellious to accept the discipline of that particular person sleeping on a pile of shavings and things like that. So when he came to this country, he spent 2 cents to learn the English alphabet and reached a point through his own reading and studies to be able to argue his own cases in court. My mother was left with her grandparents in this small town when her mother, who was widowed, went to America. My mother couldn't cross the border because she had something wrong with her eyes and was sent back, where she lived with her grandparents for 4 years. Evidently it was a very happy time for her. She was operated on, as she remembered, on the kitchen table with 4 men holding her down. It was evidently a reasonably nice town. Her grandparents spoiled her. Everybody spoiled her. She was very musical and would sing for people. She said she would go into the orchards and the Polish peasants would make wreaths of new cherries, newly ripened cherries, for her to sing songs, make up songs to sing songs, whatever. And then my mother's stepfather sent for her. At the age of 11, she came to America more or less by herself, in that the man from their shtetl, who was living in St. Louis, was visiting and took her back with him as his daughter. She wouldn't speak, obviously she couldn't speak on the ship or anything else because mm-hmm. she knew no English. Mm-hmm. So he said she was very shy. And then my grandparents had a small business. I guess in St. Louis, or in the small town near St. Louis called Belleville, Illinois. My father had been working at Ford in Detroit. He hated that. And he thought what he would like to do would be to meet some rich young Jewish girl, marry her, and take her money and go off to California. But evidently, when he met my mother, fell madly in love, and never left, and stayed madly in love till his death, at the age of 82. Mm-hmm.
Do you know the names of the towns that they came from?
I don't know the name of the town my mother came from. My dad came from Warsaw, actually across the river Praha. But his father's family lived in Warsaw and had a dairy store. And his grandfather is mentioned in one of the stories in Sholem Aleichem.
Huh.
Ran a dairy store in Warsaw.
What, just as a dairyman?
Yes, and who helped either Tevye or Sholem Aleichem himself.
What was the family name there?
Goldberg. This is a picture which my cousin in Paris found of my great-grandparents. They're very distinguished. If you look at my grandfather from there, my father, my second cousin in Paris, also a Goldberg, it's all the same.
Yeah. The eyebrows, especially.
Yes, the eyebrows, the nose, the eyes. Isn't that amazing? It's strong. Yes, and it's strong genetic strain. So,
Was your grandfather friends with Sholem Aleichem, or just he was very well known, or what?
No, evidently the dairy store was well known, and they were very highly thought of. My father's uncle, after whom I am named, Ben Sion Goldberg, was a poet. And a blacksmith or something like that, when there was a small pogrom on a farm or something, the poet took a wheel off of a wagon and fought the peasants who were attacking the Jewish community and the rest of them strong fighters.
What's your dad's name?
My father's name in Hebrew?
In English, too.
Oh, Charles Samuel in English, Shmuel Ishaya in Hebrew.
And your mother?
Pessy. But she took her stepfather's name when she came to this country, which was Tannenbaum.
What was her
original
name, you know?
Schechter, I think. Yes, her grandfather was a shochet who had a butcher shop.
And are they still living? Are they still
my
there?
Parents, no, they've passed on. My mother's family, a number of them, moved to Hartford. And they seem to have changed their names and have lost track of them. Every time I'm in that area, I try phoning the names. My mother's sister, who kept in touch with everybody, has passed away. We also have relatives in South Africa, which I have no trace whatsoever. I keep in touch, obviously, with my father's family, and what's left of it, of course, in Paris. And of the large family in Warsaw, there's one survivor who lives in Israel.
You mentioned your father went to Chicago originally?
No, originally to New York. He hated it. And I don't know, along the way he went, he said he was working in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and he worked in Detroit, and made his way to St. Louis.
What did he do?
Whatever. You know, he was a bright man, could learn in to do anything. Mm-hmm. When I was born, my folks had a small dry goods store in a little town at Belleville, Illinois, with a total of 60 Jewish families. And then during the Depression, that didn't go anymore, so he opened a junkyard for which he had to fight in court, argued his own case, and found through the help of friends in the coal mining business that many of the pieces of worn out machinery that he bought from one place to another could be taken apart and sold as parts. So the farmers would come in, they needed a pulley for the old time thrashing machine. You know, we learned how to take them apart, recondition them, and put them up for sale. I remember once my older brother came in. I was still asleep. He said, "Come on, Bernard. You like to paint. We've got something for you." When I was young, short talent. And the graphic artist said, "Oh, great. That's wonderful. What is it? Come on outside. I'll show you." To paint oil on the rusting pulleys and equipment that was standing.
How many children were you?
We were four. An older brother, Gene, who took over my father's business when he left it, when he retired. My brother Norman, who is a musician but is an importer of music and books and publisher. And my sister, who was 9.5 years younger than I and almost 20 years younger than my older brother. A happy surprise.
And what does she do? Where is she?
She died.
Oh.
It'll be 5 years from cancer. And my older brother just dropped dead. Doing favors for people. Wonderful man. So my older brother was put to play the violin, even though my folks had little money, but you know, a Jewish family, you have to learn some music. My second brother was put to the piano, and then one day when he was 9 years old, I'm told, he saw a parade go by, and he told my parents that, you know, you can't carry the piano in the parade. Well, he stopped. I remember, and certainly I was told about, standing on a chair with a chair on and conducting my brothers as they played. But you know, that was just considered cute. They didn't have a special talent or something. They played, ooh.
When did you first start to play anything?
Well, I started on the flute when I was in sixth grade, so I guess I started school when I was 4.5, and now I'm 4.5, 7, so I guess 10 or 11. So. I wanted to play before, but of course, during the Depression, my folks couldn't afford to get an instrument. My brother still plays occasionally, just for fun. He was at one time extra with the St. Louis Symphony, but he found that it took too much time and didn't pay enough. So. Brilliant man. Very nice.
You mentioned that your mother was very musical.
Yes. I guess my father was too, but in a more reserved way. My mother never stopped singing. And occasionally my father would say, "Bessie, can you keep quiet a little bit?" She would say, "Charlie, there's a song for everything." And right away she'd think of something, and she had an enormous repertory of songs, and she learned all the flute pieces that I practiced without thinking about it. But she would mix them all up, you know, one after the other, and I'd never think of this is Mozart's G major concerto, and this tune is from Mozart's C major concerto. She just sang. So I would listen carefully to her because her phrasing was so much better than mine by instinct. And my father sometimes made some very, very shrewd observations. His brother, his younger brother, had a magnificent voice and was singing in a choir when he was a young fellow in New York. And the Chazan told him, Harry, you have a wonderful voice. You've got to quit your job in the paper box factory and study. I'll teach you the singing, but you have to learn how to read music. You have to learn how to play piano. You have to study languages. There's no time for paper box factory, but you have a great voice. Well, my uncle thought that was too much trouble and too risky. He was making money in the paper box factory and was occasionally singing in Broadway shows, you know, in the chorus or something. So the Chazan took a second choice by the name of Pincus or something like that, who, when he started his career, changed his name to Jan Pierce. So if that was the second choice, you can imagine what my uncle's gift was.
And that's your father's brother.
Yes. So there was music on both sides of the family, I guess. What Jewish family is there, frankly? Mediterranean peoples are musical.
How many children was your father? Just the two of them?
No, and there were two sisters. I think that there was the second sister was by a second marriage. And I think that my grandmother married twice, and just about the third time when she found out that the man was a horse thief and decided against it. You know, it's amazing about all those stories that from the old country. Mm-hmm. They weren't nice, mostly. My mother has only mostly happy memories. She remembers one small pogrom, and she said that the priest took the Jewish community into the church and hit them. That there was that kind of the peasants from the in the Alpine territory came into the village. So my father would always say, oh, what do you know growing up in a small town like that? And if you'd lived in Warsaw, you would have known the bitter life that we really had. Of course, some of the family, the folks who owned the dairy store, like the grandfather of my cousin, they stayed. Many of them stayed. Mm-hmm. Some got as far as Paris, but many of them stayed and prospered. I remember that my dad's cousin said that when they brought their father to visit in Paris, he looked around, and said, I want to see what's different. Finally, he said, I found something that's different from what we have in Warsaw. What is it? Your draperies have linings. So they must have been well off, you know.
Yes. Well, if you don't mind my asking, when were you born?
I was born in 1923.
What's your birthday?
In the end of January.
In Belleville.
Mm-hmm. In St. Elizabeth's Hospital. The only hospital at the time. Very South German Catholic community.
Is it near Chicago?
No, it's near St. Louis.
Oh.
Many of the people I were settled there after the 1848 revolution were in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So that there was generally an intellectual and musical tradition there. The lady I studied piano with there had some first editions that her grandmama had bought first editions of of Schumann and Mendelssohn. Mm-hmm. So there's a very old musical tradition in that little town. In fact, the oldest or the second oldest amateur orchestra, community orchestra in the country is there. And until the First World War, all of the minutes of the meetings were in German. My mother got a job when she was a girl in a milliner's store because she could speak their brand of German, which was Plattdeutsch is closer to Yiddish than it is to High German. So she was bilingual. And she had, when she married my father, she really had to learn Yiddish over again.
And you went to, I assume, the public school there?
Yes, surely.
Mm-hmm. And you started taking flute from school?
Yes, in school. I was very lucky that some business people in St. Louis who had bought the name of a well-known conservatory in St. Louis, also of German origin, Strasburger, who were actually, their main business was dealing in accordions. But they wanted to open up a branch in Belleville, and they were going to bring some of their faculty, among whom was the piccolo player of the St. Louis Symphony, who had been for 27 years the first flute. And I remember I was working in the junkyard alongside my father, and then these men came in and were talking to him, and they called me over, do you want to take lessons? Yes. Practice. So for $8 a month, I had 4 half-hour lessons. And at first I was a very lazy kid and very rebellious. So I didn't do very well, but little by little I began to do better, and my teacher encouraged me. And then a fellow in the St. Louis Symphony, horn player, decided he wanted to practice conducting, so he formed a youth orchestra and asked my teacher for a flute player, who recommended that I go. At this, about the same time, the principal second violin of the St. Louis Symphony asked my teacher for a young flute player to play Mozart Flute and Harp Concerto with his young son, who was studying harp. And eventually I was sort of taken into that family. I went every, when Mr. Kiebert stopped coming to Belleville, the number of students dwindled and he was getting up in years. Then I went to St. Louis for my lesson, and I would spend the weekend with the Drusinski family. And I was just like a member of the family. They're still with very, very close. So I was very lucky, even though I came from what was essentially musically illiterate parents, no matter what their talent was, to be taken in by this family and coached to an inch of my life. And I still, let's say, run on that, what I learned from Mr. Drusinski.
How do you spell Drusinski?
Drusinski.
Are we almost at the half hour?
No, I'm just not sure.
Okay.
Do you have a timer?
Can you see the number? 374.
Now we have some time. Yeah. Okay, turn it over. Keep going. What was the rest of your schooling like? The elementary school academic career, other than the music?
Oh, well, I did drama, drama club. I did chorus, and I was editor of the high school paper. I was terribly busy.
Yes.
Frantically always busy. I must say it was easier than working in the junkyard. Stay after school to go to rehearsal or work on the paper. Essentially, I guess I'm pretty lazy. And to get everything down. Well, so then when I graduated, I changed a flute teacher to the first flutist, who was from Boston. He wanted me to go to Boston to study with his teacher, but the other gentleman wanted me to go to the Juilliard School to study with his teacher, who was one of the greatest flutists in the world, and certainly the greatest in America, whose name was Georges Barrère, and who brought the French school of flute playing to America. So I went up and auditioned, and I didn't get a scholarship. My father said to me, listen, I'll pay for 1 year, but if you don't get a scholarship after that, you have to think about choosing something else as a career. We have to assume you don't have the talent. Luckily, I did get a scholarship, and Mr. Barrère, I also was lucky to get Mr. Barrère right away. And I was also very lucky that we rented a room. There still are no dorms at Juilliard School. They plan to build one now. But I was lucky to get a room with a family. The father had retired, Russian immigrant, had retired from the West Point band. And the daughter had had a career as a singer, was still singing a great deal, but she was very short, and the need for her specialty, she was a soloist at the old Roxy Theater. She would appear as a bird in the gilded cage and all kinds of things like that. But was an assistant to one of the most famous singing teachers in New York. So all these little girls would come and do their things that had flute obbligato. Hey, Bernard, come in and play for my student. Okay, so it was a wonderful experience. And they kept after me to practice. After all, a 17-year-old kid from a small Midwestern town, more or less alone in New York City, I was completely befuddled. I had no idea. Every weekend I would go to the relatives in Brooklyn. Aunt Laura did the wash for me and all things like that, but they didn't say, hey, don't come here this afternoon. Go to the museum. Do this and that, you know. Learn New York besides the family. But that's all right.
What years were you in New York?
I went to Juilliard in 1940 and left there in 1943. So I was there when the United States got into the war.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks where I rented a room my third year were a young couple musicians, and they told me that there was going to be an audition at the Metropolitan Opera House for a second flute in the Cleveland Orchestra. Why don't I go take it? Since I didn't know what an audition was, except, you know, small town kid, I didn't know the tryout and audition were synonymous. So I went to take the audition, and since I had been rejected by the draft, they gave me a contract. And I came for my first lesson. After that happened, my teacher said, I hear you have job. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. You should never do second flute. You must be first flute. I will, in Indianapolis, is first flute. I will call. So he called, the job was taken, so I took that job. Because I figured it was more important to take the job than to hang around, even though I should have stayed to study with him. But it's not so easy to get jobs in the symphonic field. Now it's unbelievable. Now the competition, I mean, every ex-agriculture school, you know, state college, or state teachers college, what they call normal schools, you know, used to be a 2-year program, suddenly they have music departments and conservatories, and they're turning out all these kids who are ill-equipped to compete for the jobs. Sad. when I auditioned for, after 2 years in Cleveland, the first flute player there decided to go to New York. He was going to burn up the world. And I auditioned again and was engaged as first flute. Then, when they changed conductors, they must have had some agreement with that other man before. He decided to come back, and they offered me assistant first. They were enlarging the orchestra, but I wanted to go study in France. So I left, and I went back to New York eventually, and started studying interpretation of Bach with a famous cellist teacher. And then after a year of so-called freelancing, which was mostly the $20 bill Mama put in the letter, I had contracts for the following year, and the vacancy occurred here in Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh Symphony with Fritz Reiner. Everybody said, go. In fact, the New York contractor for the Pittsburgh Symphony was already hunting for me, as he'd been told about me. And so I offended some people in New York by getting out of contracts, but I came here, and I've been here ever since.
I'm not sure if it's close to our
time. No, it's not. It should be pretty close.
Mm-hmm.